someone were to leave it intentionally, his prayer is still valid, but he has left a great reward. Okay. Likewise, he should in these two surahs, it doesn't have to be a surah in and of itself, but it should be at least, the scholars say, 3 or 4 verses long. You know, some bare minimum should be said. So you shouldn't just say, wal asr, and that's it, go down. You know, it should be at least 3 or 4 verses. It should make sense like a paragraph of text. Okay. Let's go at the end, inshallah. Unless it's in the Quran, the verse is in the Quran. Unless it's a long verse, like Ayat al-Kursi. Okay, or a long verse. The point is, it should be some type of, you know, paragraph of text. Okay? Yeah, an ayah, yeah. No, basically, you should recite a certain amount of text, a paragraph equivalent. Like for example, Ayat al-Kursi is a long verse, okay? It'll do the job. Inna a'tayna al-kawthar is 3 verses, it'll do the job, this whole surah. Basically, you should recite not just a little amount, just a more than just a little amount, okay? The scholars say either 3 small verses or 1 long verse, you know? If you have a long verse, then recite that. Play, that's the 5th sunnah or 4th? The 5th, okay. The 6th one is that the imam or the one that is reciting alone, he should read out loud in the Fajr prayers, and in the first 2 rak'ahs of Maghrib, and in the first 2 rak'ahs of Isha, and in the Jum'ah prayers, 4 prayers. He should read out loud so that the people behind can hear. So there are 4 prayers where it is sunnah to read out loud. Fajr, first 2 rak'ahs of Maghrib, first 2 rak'ahs of Isha, and Jum'ah. If a person is leading the prayer, or he is praying alone, except for Jum'ah, because Jum'ah doesn't take place alone. But the other 3 prayers, even if he's reading alone in his house, Fajr prayer, it is sunnah to recite it in a loud voice. Okay? So it's sunnah. It's not a wajib or a rukun or a shart or anything. It's sunnah to recite it in a loud voice. Okay, likewise, it is sunnah to say when you stand up from ruku', you say, Sami Allahu min hamid rabbana wa lakal hamd. What are these 2 statements? Fard or wajib or sunnah? What? These 2 statements are wajib, okay? You understand? Rabbana wa lakal hamd is wajib. But to go more than that, to go beyond that, this is sunnah. So you say, Rabbana wa lakal hamdu. حمداً كثيراً طيباً مباركاً فيه كما يحب ربنا ويرضى ملء السماوات وملء الأرض وملء ما بينهما وملء ما شئت من شيء بعد.
You don't have to write it down. It's available in that green book I keep on telling you about to buy, Fortification of the Muslim Through Remembrance and Prayer. I advise every single Muslim to get a copy of this book. It changed colors to green or purple or orange. Okay. But point is, this book is available. I encourage everyone to buy it. All of these du'as that a Muslim should use in his daily life and day-to-day life, they are all mentioned. Where to buy from? I don't know. Ask maybe Dar al-Salam has it or not. Okay, he has a different version of that one.
And
this would be number 7, yeah. So to add something more than the Rabbana wa lakal hamd is sunnah. Okay? Likewise, to say Subhana Rabbi al-A'la and Subhana Rabbi al-Azim more than once is sunnah. What was the saying of it once? What does that qualify as? What is the hukum of saying it once? Wajib. You must say it at least once. Subhana Rabbi al-A'la. Okay, or Subhana Rabbi al-Azim. To say it more times and to say it in a more complete form. Subhana Rabbi al-A'la wa bihamdihi. Subhana Rabbi al-A'la wa bihamdihi. Subhana Rabbi al-A'la wa bihamdihi. 3 times. Okay? Or even more, as long as it's an odd number. This is sunnah. And it's encouraged to say it more than just once in the prayer. Okay? Likewise, another sunnah is to say the final tashahud upon the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Okay? The tashahud in and of itself, the final tashahud, what is the hukum of that? The tashahud in and of itself, what?
The first one is the wajib and the last one is the
rukun. The first tashahud is wajib, the second tashahud is rukun. If there's only one tashahud in the whole prayer, in other words, it's a 2 rak'ah prayer, it's going to be a rukun. Okay? If there's a 3 or a 4 rak'ah, then the first tashahud is wajib, and the second tashahud is rukun. Now, after the tashahud, you say Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama. This portion is sunnah. So the first portion is rukun, the second portion is sunnah. Clear? 8th one, whatever. I'm not really numbering myself. Whatever you guys are numbering. 8th one. Okay. Likewise, to say it in a perfect manner, you know. Allah. 9th one, whatever. I mean, inshallah, you guys can compare notes and find out which one. Maybe one of you merged 2 of them together. So, for example, you say, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid wa barik ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama barakta ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid. Or there are other narrations also in the sunnah concerning how to say the salam, but this is the most common one and most of us have memorized this.
the last sunnah. This is mentioned in the sunnah. This is the sunnah, yes. Before that is rukun. The tashahud, at-tahiyyatu lillah, wa salatu wa tayyibat, as-salamu alayka ayyuhan nabi, this is a rukun of salah, the last one that you do in the prayer. The last one is a rukun. What you say after this, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad, wa ala ali Muhammad, this portion is sunnah. We're getting there. Patience, patience. The last sunnah of actions, or excuse me, of statements is pray as the dua. So it is sunnah, strongly encouraged, after you finish the tashahud, and after you finish the salah upon the Prophet ﷺ, you make a dua before the tasneem. Okay? And in particular, the Prophet ﷺ said, when one of you finishes the tashahud, he should seek refuge in Allah from four things. Allahumma inni a'udhu bika min azabi jahannam, wa min azabi al-qabr, wa min fitnati al-mahya wal-mamat, wa min fitnati al-masih al-dajjal. This is strongly encouraged, this particular dua, to seek refuge in four things, from the punishment of the fire, from the punishment of the grave, from the fitna of this life and death, and from the fitna of the dajjal, the antichrist. This is strongly encouraged, and anything after this, because the Prophet then said, let him make any dua that he wishes. Any dua of this dunya or the akhirah, it is sunnah to make it at this point in time, before the taslim. This is also sunnah, it is not rukun or wajib. Tayyib. We have now finished the sunan of aqwal. We now move on to sunan of af'al with an ayn. Aqwal is with a waw. Af'al is with an ayn. Sunan af'al, there are many. Firstly, to raise your hands with the takbiratul ihram. What is the status of the takbiratul ihram itself? A rukun. To raise your hands while you are saying it is sunnah. Okay, to raise your hands while saying it is sunnah. Likewise, to raise your hands when you stand up from ruku', and to raise your hands when you before you go down to ruku', and to raise your hands, what's the fourth time? When you stand up from the second rak'ah. So if you don't stand up from the second rak'ah, you won't raise your hands. These four places, it is sunnah to raise your hands, physically raise your hands, up to your ears, okay, to the level of your ears. Either this way or that way. I mean, in a sense, it must go up to there. That you raise your hands, also some narrations are even to the shoulder, like you just go up like this. So you raise your hands four times. These are the four times for the sunnah. Another sunnah is to place your right hand on your left hand on your shoulders, like this. Okay? To place your right hand on your left hand. The right hand is on your left hand, okay? Not on your shoulders, excuse me. No one corrects me. Chest. On your chest, on the lower portion of your chest. This is because the Prophet ﷺ said that, or it is narrated in Sunan Abi Dawud, that the Prophet ﷺ would place his right hand on his left hand on his sadr, on his chest. This is also narrated in Sahih ibn Khuzaymah. Be patient, Hafiz. You are very quick. Hold on, hold on. We're getting there. Right now we're talking about where to place the hand. Okay? So the sunnah is to place it on the chest. There are some narrations, but they are weak according to the ijma' of the muhaddithin, Imam al-Nawawi, and he was a Shafi'i, by the way. Imam al-Nawawi said in his Majmu', which is a famous work of his, which is printed in 27 or 8 volumes, that big, literally. I think one of the biggest books I have in my library, it's that long. He says in this book, al-Majmu', that the muhaddithin have unanimous consensus that the narration that mentions below the navel is a weak narration. This is reported by Abu Dawud. Abu Dawud, after he reported this, he himself said that this narration is weak. Okay? To place your hands, your right hand, on the left hand, below your navel, okay? This is a weak narration. It is not an authentic narration. And a narration that is hasan, or that is acceptable, states that the Prophet would place his right hand on his left hand, on his chest. Okay? This is reported by Abu Dawud and Ibn Khuzaymah, explicit. In both narrations, explicitly on his chest. See Fardhi. As for those people that pray with their hands down, like this, then know that there is no narration whatsoever, either authentic or weak, or even forged from the Prophet ﷺ that he would pray with his hands down. This is blind imitation of a certain scholar for a certain reason that he did this, because he was whipped and beaten, that he could not raise his hands after that. So because of blind imitation, the sunnah, the irony is that this is the madhab of Huna, who knows? Imam Malik. The irony of this is that Imam Malik, in his own Muwatta, in his own book of Sunnah, he never put his right hand in the prayer. So how could it be?
battery is dead. How could it be? It's working now? How can it be that Imam Malik himself narrates the hadith? He is the one that is narrating the hadith in his own book, Al-Muwatta. It's still available, the Muwatta. Go read it, go look at it. Imam Malik has the chapter. Chapter number so-and-so, the placing of the right hand on the left hand in the prayer. He narrates the hadith and he goes against it. Is this possible to imagine even? So the Malikis, unfortunately, some of them, they blindly follow him to such an extent that they reject the own sunnah, the own hadith that he himself narrated. The reason that Imam Malik did this was because the Khalifa, for certain reasons, he beat him, he whipped him so hard that he couldn't raise his hands in prayer after that. Okay? But unfortunately, this is a problem of blind following, is that it makes you blind to what Allah and His Messenger says. And you exalt, like we talked about in Kitab al-Tawheed, you exalt a person to such a high level, to such a high status, that you forget who you really must follow, Allah and His Messenger. These Imams, we go through them to follow Allah and His Messenger, but we don't blindly imitate them. We blindly imitate Allah and His Messenger. So the sunnah, we said, is to place the right hand on the left hand, where? On the chest. Okay, hold on a second. Better. Tayyib. So that was which number sunnah? Okay, the third one, right?
The third one
is to stare at the place of his sajda. In other words, not to move his eyes left or right, but to stare at the place of his sajda during the prayer. Okay? This is narrated in certain hadiths that the Prophet would look at the place where he is going to do sajda in the prayer. Okay? Another sunnah is that he should stand with his feet slightly apart. Not too much apart and not too close together, but slightly apart. Okay? So for example, let me show you for example, like a slight manner. Some people, they go like this in the prayer, in order to fill in the gaps. This is not allowed. If you're not filling in the gaps, if the brother next to you is not filling the gaps, don't keep on coming closer together with him. No. Stay with your proper place. Likewise, to stand like this is against the sunnah. To stand with your feet together is against the sunnah. To stand with slightly apart. Just a normal gap, if you like. Okay? Well, that's coming later on. But right now, we're talking about the gap between the feet. It should be of a normal length. Okay? Likewise, of the sunnahs, is that when you go to rukur, then your fingers should be slightly apart. Oh, you want to be exhibit A again? No? I'll draw it, inshallah. Because just the fingers should be slightly apart. Let me do this here. The fingers should be slightly apart in rukur, like this. Okay? So, you shouldn't clasp them like that, nor should you make them wide out. Slightly apart, like this. And we also mentioned that the proper way, or the proper way of doing the rukur, is that your back should be straight and your eyes looking at the place of sajda. This is also sunnah. The rukun is that you actually do rukur, which is the minimum rukur, you just be like this. But the sunnah rukur is you go all the way down, your back is straight, your hands are slightly apart, your fingers are slightly apart, and you are staring at the place of sajda. This is the perfect rukur. The minimum rukur, which is what is the rukun, is that you just, you know, go a little bit down and your body is just about to do, you know, you can touch your knees, and you stay there until you are peaceful, you are at rest, and then you go up again. But the perfect way of doing that is to, like we said, take your back straight and your hands should be slightly apart. Okay? Okay, another sunnah is that the person should first of all go down on his hands and then on the knees when he's going down to sajda. Now there is a difference of opinion because the Prophet said one of you should not imitate the camel as it goes down. Rather, he should be different from the camel. Now, the scholars then have differed about how the camel goes down. Because do you consider its front leg, its back leg, its hands, or its feet? I mean, basically, there's a difference over how the camel goes down. So basically, the opinion that I follow, and the one I'm teaching you now, is you go with your hands first. So you go like this. Look at my hands and look at my knees. You go like this. You notice? First the hands come. First, when you go down, the hands and then the knees. Okay, this is the opinion that I follow. Like I said, there's a valid difference of opinion. If you want to follow another opinion after research, that's up to you also. You know, there's a very good ikhtilaf, very good ikhtilaf on this. Okay. Likewise, he should firmly hold on to the ground on the place of sajda. Okay, he should do sajda in a firm manner, in the sense that all of his body parts are touching. That should be touching in the sajda. Now there are 7 body parts, by the way, we forgot to mention, you might want to add this in your wajib section. There are 7 body parts, it is wajib that these body parts, they touch in your sajda, the ground. Okay? What are these body parts? What are these things? The Prophet ﷺ said that I have been commanded to perform sajda on 7 limbs, on 7 functions, on 7 body parts. The first one, he said, is the face. And when he said the face, or excuse me, he said the forehead, he said the first one is the forehead, and yet he pointed to his nose. So he said the forehead, and he pointed to his nose, meaning that both of these parts have to be touching the ground. Okay? And then he said the 2 hands, and then he said the 2 knees, and then he said the tips of the toes. So how many things are there? 7. This is 1, this is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay? So let me show you that too. Is that basically, when you perform sajda, okay, look at this now, the tips of my toes must be touching. And this goes against the sunnah of people when they go like this in sajda. No. It should be down, the tips of your toes must be touching. Likewise, your knees obviously are going to be touching. Likewise, your hands are going to be touching. And then obviously, both of your forehead and your nose. And this is another problem. Many people, they do sajda, and yet they do it on their head with their nose above the ground. Okay? Or they do it on their nose and their head is not touching. Both of these things have to touch. Both of the forehead and the nose, it must touch the place of sajda. Okay? Another sunnah is that your hands should be slightly, your fingers should be slightly apart in the sajda. Neither like this nor like that. Just slightly apart in the sajda. Yet another sunnah is that, slow down, okay. Your fingers should be slightly apart in the sajda. Just like we said for the ruku'ah, that you don't make your fingers wide apart, nor do you make them all together, just slightly apart. Yet another sunnah is that when you are in sajda, you do not make your elbows go out all the way, nor do you make them touch your body, but in the middle. Okay? You don't make it go out, because the Prophet ﷺ forbade looking like a dog, forbade this type of like the dog does. You don't take it all the way out, and you don't hold it close to your body, but in between. So for example, it would be like that. Well, let me try doing that again too. Okay? It would be something like this. Like that. Okay? You don't take it all the way out, neither do you take it all the way in. It's just slightly apart. Okay? So this is also of the sunnah, because the Prophet said he forbade the acting like a dog, or the taking out of the dog in the prayer. What number are we on right now? Number 9. Number 10 is... This is 9. Okay. Okay, another point during the sajda is that his stomach should be free of his thighs, in the sense that he is doing sajda in a normal manner, and he shouldn't be close together. It should be a normal manner. His stomach should be free of his thighs. Okay, you understand that point? So his stomach should not be touching his thighs. It should be a bit away from that. Okay, like a normal sajda, basically. Yet another sunnah of the prayer, and like I said, I'm sorry, really can't get into detail on the evidences, but all of this is narrated in hadith of the Prophet. You can look it up, go to Sahih Bukhari, go to Sahih Muslim, go to, you know, Bulugh al-Maram, any books out, and you'll be able to find all of these sunnahs that the Prophet used to pray in this manner. Okay? Another sunnah is that he should sit, it is called in the iftirash manner. Just write this down for now, I'll show you what it is. He should sit in the iftirash manner for the first tashahud and between the sajdahs. And he should sit in a tawarruk manner for the last tashahud. He should sit in an iftirash manner. We'll show you, we'll demonstrate for you how it is. He should sit in an iftirash manner for the first tashahud and for sitting between the two sajdas. And he should sit in a tawarruk manner for the second tashahud. So now, what if a prayer is of 2 rak'ahs? What should he do? No, iftirash. Iftirash, because that's the first tashahud. In this case, you take it in the other way, from the other way. So if it's 2 rak'ahs, it's sunnah to sit in an iftirash manner. If it's 3 or 4 rak'ahs, then in the second one, you're going to sit iftirash, and the third or the fourth, you're going to sit tawarruk. Now, what is iftirash, and what is tawarruk? Pay close attention. Okay, this is the iftirash manner. I'll show you on different angles here, unfortunately. Is that basically, this is the iftirash, and that, I think it's best to do it this way. Is that your right foot has your toes pointing forward, and you are sitting on the sole of your left foot. This is iftirash. Okay? Is that clear? Everyone can see? Your right foot is pointing towards the qibla, and you are sitting on your left foot. This is iftirash. Okay? Tawarruk means that you have taken your left foot and put it underneath your right foot, so you sit basically on your thigh and on your left buttock, like this. This is tawarruk. Okay? So the Prophet ﷺ, in the second rak'ah, in the first tashahud, basically, he would sit iftirash. And in the third or the fourth rak'ah, he would sit tawarruk. Everyone saw that? Clear? Okay. Likewise, it is of the sunnah to turn right and then left while saying the taslim. We said that what is the status of the first taslim? The first taslim is? Rukun. Rukun. The second taslim is? Sunnah. Sunnah. Now, when you say the taslim, to turn right and then to turn left is of the sunnah. Okay? The Prophet ﷺ said that, or in fact, Anas, or Had Amir Sa'd, I think in Abi Waqqas, he reported that I saw the Prophet ﷺ at the end of the prayer, he would turn right and then he would turn left, so much so that I could see the whiteness of his cheek. I could see the whiteness of his cheek. He would turn to such an extent, right? Guys. He would turn to such an extent that you could see the whiteness of his cheek from the right hand side and the left hand side. So this is also a part of the sunnah. So with that we have completed the sunan of salah of aqwal and of af'al. Statements that are sunnah and actions that are sunnah. We now move on to another long list. And that is what is discouraged during the prayer. Not what destroys the prayer, but what is discouraged, what is makruh during the prayer. What is discouraged during the prayer. Again, a long list. Firstly, what is discouraged is that he should only recite the Fatiha without saying another surah. Because we said to say another surah is what? Sunnah. But this particular sunnah is strongly encouraged. And that after he says Fatiha in the first surah Qad, he should repeat another surah after the Fatiha. Likewise, it is discouraged to repeat the Fatiha for no reason. Because the Fatiha is a rukun and you only do rukun once. So you don't repeat the Fatiha. And I think a sister asked me yesterday about repeating Fatiha. She didn't pay attention. And it is discouraged, like I said to her then, is that this is a rukun. You shouldn't repeat it again, even if she wasn't paying attention. Unless she realizes that she did not read the Fatiha, in which case she must read it in the first place. Or she read it with a major mistake, like she skipped a verse or something. Obviously, in this case, she will repeat it. But to repeat it for no reason, just to say it once and then say it again, this is discouraged in Salah. In the same rak'ah, obviously. You have to say it in every rak'ah differently. Another thing that is discouraged, number three, I think? Number two, okay. Number three. Saying only the Fatiha, number two is repeating the Fatiha. Repeating the Fatiha in the same rak'ah for no reason. Okay? Number one is saying only the Fatiha without going on to another surah or another verse. Number two is repeating Fatiha. You say Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen all the way to the end, and then you say it all over again, Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen all the way to the end. This is discouraged. Okay? The third thing is to turn without any reason, to turn around for no reason. Okay? Because Aisha said in the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that this is a stealing, that the shaitan steals from your prayer. So when a person is praying and you find that his eyes wander here or there, or his body turns a little bit here or there, this is stealing, that the shaitan steals from your prayer. Shaitan is stealing from your prayer because it goes against the humbleness that a person should have during the prayer. So another thing that is discouraged is to turn for no reason. Yet another aspect which is encouraged is to close one's eyes during the prayer. Okay, the proof for this is what? We just mentioned it a little while ago. Because it's sunnah to look at the place of sajda. So obviously to close your eyes, you go against the sunnah. Okay. Yet another thing which is discouraged is to carry something for no reason, like carrying a baby for no reason. If you must carry, then it's fine. But if you can, for example, give the child or something to another person, then you should not be carrying it. Okay? But it is allowed to, because the Prophet ﷺ, he would carry the daughter of Zainab in his hand. And he would pray while his granddaughter was in his hand. Okay? So when he did ruku' or sujood, he would place her on the ground and then he would pick her up. Because Allahu A'lam, the scholars say that there was no one in the family or at that time to take care of it, and that the Prophet's household, they might have gone somewhere, Allah knows what, but he was carrying Zainab. But, or excuse me, not Zainab, Zainab's daughter. But they say then that to carry a child or something for no reason is discouraged. Because why? Obviously your concentration becomes less. Another thing that is discouraged is to stick out his elbows during the sajda. We already went over this. It is against the sunnah. To stick them out like a dog, like this or like that all the way. You know, like your hand should be close to your ears. Now to go like this, right, or to go with your hands close with your elbows sticking out, this is discouraged because the Prophet ﷺ forbade the sitting of a dog, basically. And this is how the dog, if you look at the dog, this is what he does. And this is not what we are supposed to do. What number are we on? Seven. Number seven is to mess around during the prayer. Just do ridiculous acts that are not of the prayer. To do external acts. So for example, and they give many examples of combing your hair or straightening your beard, you know,
or just checking your clothes, you know. This is abbas, it is a wasting of time, okay? Because obviously this goes against the humbleness and the fear and the khushu' that one should have during the prayer. So these type of acts are also discouraged, okay? This obviously is common sense. Number eight is to place the hands right on the navel. This is, by the way, not what the Hanafis do. They place it below the navel. We're saying it's discouraged to place it right on the navel. This is because the Prophet said in an authentic hadith, the Prophet forbade a person from praying with his hands on his navel. It should be above it. This is the sunnah. Okay? And one of the madhhabs, the Hanafis, they have it below the navel. But to have it on the navel, this is discouraged. Another aspect that is encouraged is to discouraged, excuse me, is to open his mouth or to cover his mouth with something. Because the Prophet also in one hadith, he forbade this. That during the prayer, a man, if he has a turban on, or a woman has niqab on, if there are no men in front of the woman that are not her mahram, she should take the niqab off. Okay? Likewise, the men, if they have a turban or something that they're covering with, they should take it off their face, their mouth. Okay? They should take it off there. Likewise, it is discouraged to pray to an object besides a sutra. So basically,